It's time now for the best of ourselves with Marcia Hyatt. Good morning.
Good morning, CJ.
We're on the air.
We are on the air. It's lovely. I'm glad. Well, it's just great talking to you, too. And
oh,
it's also
you.
Good that we're talking to other people out there. I want to talk about images, the power of images. A quote from a friend of mine is, "Action is born in the image first created." How we image things roots our behavior. Now, I used to be a fairly traditional corporate person, and I thought, you know, numbers and data and debate, you know, were the way to know things, which is not untrue, but it's not the whole truth. What I learned is that, I joined a little learning group with a couple of women about 20 years ago, and we were trying to get more aware about how to be more effective as people and how to be more effective as leaders and how to be more effective as organizations. And in doing that work, we discovered the power of images. I have to say my partners knew this. I learned this from them. But for example, we do strategic planning and we'd try to think, what obstacles are we dealing with? Like, for example, this is a 20-year-old metaphor, but it still sticks in my head. We were three old tea bags trying to infuse too many teapots. You get an image like that.
Yeah.
It stays, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or a small fish swimming at the mouth of a shark. You get images like that,
yeah.
and it holds. It holds a meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's, you know, images, that's nice, kind of look like a little training game or something. But what I've been learning over the years is we have an image of how the world works and our place in it. And the more we get conscious of that, the more we see a broader range of choices. So just a little background, like in Evolution of Consciousness, which is a book by Robert Orenstein, Robert Orenstein says our brain receives about 1/1,000,000,000th of the information that is available to it. And we cope by creating patterns in our brain. These eternally held images or patterns are magnets. So we see something, it affirms what we believe or what we know, right? And if it doesn't match what we believe, then we usually kind of discount it or, you know, ignore it. William Yabroth, a Jungian, said in his book, The Inner Image, the image captures the experience and we use words to report it out. So there's a lot of knowledge that we hold, and we understand that part of our brain is all image, and the right hemisphere is feeling and imagery, but it's the left brain that has the day. I mean, the left brain holds a lot of our conscious time, right? And so if you think of it this way, the way I think of it is my white brain's kind of whispering, you know, it's whispering. It's got these images that are holding me captive. Kenneth Boulding was an extraordinary economist. He's an economist. And in the 50s, he wrote a book called The Image. And basically, as an economist, philosopher, and many other things, he was looking at why do we do what we do? And he came up again with this book called The Image in 1956. And he says, because the image of what we have is our subjective knowledge, and it determines what we do. So, quote, we know that what we used to regard as primary sense data are highly learned interpretations. We see the world the way we see the world because it pays us and has paid us to see it that way.
So do we discard the stuff we don't want to see?
Basically, yeah.
So our brain becomes very attuned to finding those things that reinforce what we already think.
Absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely. So I remember working with a group involved leadership team. Wanted to get everybody involved. The whole group was involved in creating this conference. And I was part of this conference, but I knew that it was employee-led, basically. And during a break, an employee came up and he showed me this t-shirt they were giving away. And he said, "See this t-shirt? Another sign that management's trying to control us." You know, it was like he had a very firmly held image.
Yeah.
And even though his peers had created this workshop, you know, he was, you know, we look for things to reinforce what we already believe. So, and even though we might say we want to be different, there's this great piece of research that was presented at a chaos conference, so gosh, 10 years ago. Asaf Sohar was studying a group that was trying to create more of a flat organization, more agile, basically. And so they were using principles from self-organization chaos theory principles. And they all said they believed in this and they were going to do this less hierarchical way of organizing. But it wasn't working. And so this researcher was studying them and he found the head, head of the central office, imagined herself as a parent and the rest of the organization as her children. So for example,
yikes.
She quote, in the study, she tearfully shared her feelings of pain and confusion at the prospect of, quote, untying the apron strings and releasing her children. unquote. You know, so, you know, you have that image that I'm the parent, and you can come up with all great things on a flip chart about how you're going to be, but you got that image and it holds you as captive. And so, you know, for me, when we started playing with imagery, I still kept thinking, it's nice to do, you know, but when I was playing with my life story, you know, I have a literal life story, right? Parents divorced when I was when I was 2 years old. My mother was extraordinarily responsible, hardworking, you know, going to make everything work. And my father was a dreamer, very lovely man, but a dreamer. And so, you know, I could tell you that story. But then we played with images and metaphor, and we did some centering and some playing and loosening up, you know, and then we write Once Upon a Time. And I go off to myself and I write, Once Upon a Time, there was a woman who held up the world.
Mm.
And it took all of her strength and all of her effort to do that. And then I wrote the story. It turns out that this little girl, me, ended up holding the world up too. And then when you play with that kind of metaphor and image, well, one, I couldn't tell that story without crying for about a decade. Because once I saw it, it gave me a new way. What's the image? What's holding me in place? Because I actually intellectually know the world gets along very well without me holding it. I mean, I get that at one level, but another level, this core image.
Your world.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was holding me in place.
Yeah.
You know, in my uber responsible story that had been laid down before me. So once you play with an image and surface it, then you have a lot more ability to make a change in it. I mean, there was one time I was in a business partnership with two other women, adore these women, and but we were having trouble in our partnership, and only it became clear because those two had gone to school together, they were roommates together, they're very, very close, they called each other soulmates.
Ooh.
And then there was me.
And then there was you.
And so I had imaged them as a married couple, and I was the distant sister-in-law, you know, and we were having relationship problems. And once we surfaced that image, it's like, well, no wonder I was distancing myself from them. No wonder you're having issues. Once you can name the image that you're holding that's mm-hmm. guiding your behavior, you have more choice. So there's a lot of power in creating, reflecting, thinking in metaphor, thinking in imagery, because it can hold us in place. We have these old stories rooted in us, and they affect, like you said, what we see. We some dissonant information comes in, we can't even take it in because we have to discount because it's easier mm-hmm. for us to hold what we believe is to be true. It's not a quick process, but it is definitely worthy of playing. This is a quote by Thomas Merton, an American Trappist monk, who died not so long ago. Your life is shaped by the end you live for. You're made in the image of what you desire. So we have to pay attention to what image is guiding us right now. Is it an old and unconscious image? And how do we play it to the surface? Because if we can get it above the waterline, because a lot of what's below the waterline holds us in place.
Mm-hmm.
If we can play a little bit and think, well, what image am I having right now? What metaphor captures what's going on right now? It may not come right away, but if you can come up with a name or an image, it has a lot of power. Let me end with a quote by Claude Bristol, who is a journalist and author. Every person is the creation of himself and the image of his own thinking and believing. As individuals think and believe, so they are.
Mm.
So if we could just spend a little time surfacing the images that we hold, we may see a few more choices.